Welcome to the National Geographic Reach podcast series. I am Barbara Quincer-Coulter, Director of Research and Professional Development at National Geographic School Publishing. Our guest today is Dr. Deborah Short, Senior Research Associate at the Center for Applied Linguistics and Director of Academic Language Research and Training. Dr. Short co-developed the PSYOP model and has directed quasi-experimental and experimental research on English language learners. Her publications include articles in TESOL Quarterly, Journal of Educational Research, Educational Leadership, and several ESL series for National Geographic Hampton Brown, including EDGE, Inside, Reach, High Point, and Avenues. Our topic today is scaffolding, with an emphasis on extending your students' reach and moving them toward independence. Dr. Short, it's great to have you here today to focus on this important topic. To help our listeners get on the same page, can you define scaffolding for us?
Hello, Barbara. Thank you for having me participate in this. Let me tell you very briefly, scaffolding is providing support for students at their current level of knowledge and English proficiency and helping them to advance to higher levels. But I think I need to go in more detail than that. For our listeners, think about scaffolding that you see around a new building that's being constructed. You see the wire work on the outside, and that's used both to support the building as well as the workers who are adding walls and windows and wiring. But as the building becomes whole and it stabilizes, the scaffolding is slowly removed until the building can stand on its own. And that's really what we're trying to do with the students, because the goal for each educator is for students to have the ability to work independently. But we know for our English language learners, teachers have to help build that ability and their knowledge in a step-by-step fashion so that they guide the students as they're trying to use, say, a new language function, like how to express cause and effect, or how to complete an academic task. What we have found is that teachers may scaffold a number of things in the lesson. They might scaffold the language development for the students, the content knowledge that the students have to acquire, or specific procedures for a task that they're going to be doing in class. Overall, if you have effective scaffolding, then it increases the student's independence in performing a task or learning a new concept. But it's very important to reach that independence through a gradual release of responsibility.
In your monograph, you mentioned that teachers can scaffold verbally. Can you explain this and provide some examples?
Absolutely. In order to acquire proficiency in a new language, students need to use that language. They need to practice it. They have to interact with it in ways that go beyond just listening for something familiar, like a typical phrase the teachers might say is open your textbook to page 10. And they often, especially in the early stages of language development, will respond to teachers nonverbally. They'll nod, they'll turn their page, or they'll give one or two word answers. With verbal scaffolds, we're trying to help the students expand their language production orally and also their listening skills. So, for example, a teacher might use verbal scaffolds to clarify information or concepts for a student. Think about a read-aloud situation. A teacher is reading a story to the students and comes across a word that he or she knows is new for a lot of the kids in the class. At that point in time, the teacher would provide a quick oral definition or a synonym for that word and then go on with the reading. So it's providing that comprehensible input right at the time the students need it. Another way that the teachers can use the verbal scaffolds is to elicit more responsiveness from the students so they can elaborate on their statements, for example. If you've got students who reply to a question with just one word, quite often, teachers will expand on that. They'll take that one word, they might say yes, and then they give an explanation. What we are asking the teachers to do is to play ping pong, basically, with the kids. Bounce the ball back to them and say things to them like, well, what do you mean by that? Or can you tell me more? And then in doing that, we're helping the students advance the sophistication of their own language use. Another type of verbal scaffold that is really important for our English language learners is the use of a sentence frame or sentence starter. These can help students articulate their ideas or practice a specific language function. A sentence starter may be something like, the result of the experiment was dot, dot, dot. And the students would fill that in, either orally or in writing. And then a sentence frame might be something like, if the scientist blank, then she will find blank. When you think about it, in the first case, it's telling the student how to report a result. The result of the experiment was. That's a very typical academic frame that's good for the kids to learn. In the second instance, it gives an outline for how to formulate an if-then statement. Again, the kind of academic language that our English language learners need to acquire and be comfortable with in the classrooms.
Thank you. And you also refer to instructional scaffolds. What are these and how do they differ from verbal scaffolds?
Well, Barbara, instructional scaffolds may even be what most teachers think of right from the start when they hear the word scaffolding. They're the kind of tools that teachers use to make information more comprehensible to the students. If the students can't learn on their own, say by listening to the teacher lecture or reading a textbook, then the teacher would determine what's an appropriate scaffold to convey the concept. A very common scaffold is the use of visuals. You know, lots of teachers of English language learners will have pictures or photos or graphics to provide some nonverbal support to help convey these new ideas or new concepts. But technology is also a wonderful new option that we have for instructional scaffolds. Particularly, I love the idea of showing video clips to the students to help give them some background information. If you think about a lesson that might be on volcanoes, let's say, a teacher could show a 3-minute clip that shows the volcano erupting, spewing molten lava and rock, and then showing the aftermath of that eruption. The students would get an idea right away what this is all about, and then the teacher can develop the vocabulary and do a reading or a writing on the particular topic. Other kinds of instructional scaffolds that teachers tend to use are reading guides and different graphic organizers that can be helpful before a reading, during it, or after the reading, as the students are gathering some information or collating their knowledge based on the passage. And I think many teachers are familiar with instructional scaffolds when they teach writing to students. Because the writing process is fairly popular, it is a step-by-step scaffold. Often the writing will start out with some type of brainstorm. And the students and teachers will talk out their ideas as they prepare a pre-writing task. Then they might draft the text that they're working on. But that's not final yet. They share it with a partner. They might share it with the teacher. They get some feedback. They do some revisions, and then they prepare a final draft. And that's what's so important, is that we're not taking the students from just introducing new material and then expecting them to do it on their own immediately. We're building in the support all along the way.
Thanks, Deborah. And you provided some really great examples so that we now can understand the difference between the verbal scaffolds and instructional scaffolds. But how does a teacher know when to remove scaffolds?
That's an excellent question. You know, we don't want the teachers to keep the scaffolds in place for so long that they become crutches and the students can't perform without them or haven't moved to the sense where they can learn on their own. But we also don't want to pull away those scaffolds rapidly and set the students up for failure. The concept that's widely used now is called gradual release of responsibility. And really, gradual is the key term. Teachers have to be thoughtful about the scaffolds and monitor their students' progress. So think about that writing process, the process writing example again. First of all, teachers wouldn't want to tell the students to write that final version for submission right from the get-go because it sets them up for failure. So they want to give them support and practice so when the student faces like a writing prompt on a state test, they have the ability to respond well. But for this to happen, it means that the teacher had to have gone through the writing process step by step, but also give the students opportunities to do different types of writing using the process. So when they're confronted with the state test, for example, and they have to write a comparative essay or create a marketing plan for a new product, they feel more confident to do so on their own. When teachers are providing good scaffolding, they guide the students to construct meaning from the text, from the classroom discourse, so that they understand more complex content concepts. We have an expression in language education of comprehensible input plus one, we always want to be moving the students a little bit further along. And that means we have to give them some increasing amounts of freedom to try things out on their own. And that, again, comes back to monitoring how well they're doing. If we see students being very successful with the scaffold, we start to remove them little by little. But if the students are getting stuck, then we have to help them out. So the challenge, obviously, for the teachers is when to remove them. And, you know, it's knowing your students, knowing the kind of support you've provided up to now, taking away those supports, perhaps, to see if that independent work is successful. But if there is a struggle with the student, then you have to step back in a little bit.
Thank you. And as we move into our educators that are using REACH, what guidance can teachers find in REACH to help them scaffold instruction?
You know, Barbara, we built a number of features in REACH, both in the teacher edition and the students' books, that will really help with the scaffolding situation. One of the prime things that the teachers will find are differentiation options. If you have a task that you're going to work with in a group of students, particularly if there are multiple proficiency levels in the class, then there are different ways and different opportunities to engage all of the students in the material. So there are multi-level strategies for the teachers. Other things that we have, especially for the instructional scaffolds, are the wonderful use of visuals. You know how terrific it's been to have access to the National Geographic Video Library, for example, to help provide background or illustrate new concepts for the students. And we have a lot of supports online that will help the teachers with graphic organizers and with some other materials that will help the students with the comprehensible input. We also tried to provide models of good speech so that there are audio options that the students can listen to and hear how academic English is spoken. With regard to that, we also have a lot of language frames, those sentence starters and sentence frames I mentioned earlier, to help give the students that support to use academic language appropriately for the different content areas. And then for the teachers, we have some different question prompts to help elicit more of those elaborated responses from the students to advance their proficiency and to promote more language practice. One other thing that I think you'll find throughout the REACH program is the use of cooperative learning structures. Now, the way we've set it up is the teachers actually teach the students how to use the structure, and they practice it, so it becomes more routinized for them. And then within that structure, they also learn the kind of language that they have to produce in order to support the work that the cooperative team is doing. I think probably the important thing in REACH, maybe one of the most important things, is that we really provide opportunities to challenge the students so that the teachers who are interested in perhaps removing those scaffolds, helping them do their work more independently, they have those opportunities and those suggestions right in the materials.
As we wrap up this podcast, Deborah, what advice and or questions do you want to leave with our listeners today so they can refine their instructional practices to meet their students where they are and lead them towards independence?
I think what's most important is for teachers to learn several different scaffolding techniques so that they can support the students in order to help the students understand more complex concepts, but also move to more advanced language use as well. As they're using the scaffolds, they have to keep in mind that notion of gradual release of responsibility so that they move those students towards independence. I think one more example might help. If the teachers think about when they as children learned to ride a bicycle, they probably started out on a tricycle, which had the three wheels. Then maybe they progressed to a two-wheeled bike but had training wheels. So, again, it's a little more challenging, but there's still the training wheels as a scaffold there. And then when the training wheels are taken off, there probably was a parent or an older sibling or a friend who would hold the bike and run along for a little bit before letting go. So all along the way, there was some support leading to that gradual release of responsibility. The final thing I'd like to remind our listeners of is to make sure that they're using verbal and instructional scaffolds. It's easy to do the instructional ones, but the verbal scaffold means that the teacher has to be cognizant of his or her own speech and really make sure that they are trying to elicit as much language practice from the students as they can.
Thank you so much for your time today, Deborah. I think the examples you presented really will help our listeners fully understand the difference between verbal and instructional practices so that they can begin implementing them right away in their classroom. Thanks for listening to our National Geographic Reach podcast series. For more information, check out the National Geographic Reach Professional Development website for additional tools and ongoing support to help you address the needs of the English language learners in your classroom.